Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Alice Bryant. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Today, we know Antarctica as an extreme environment containing ice and snow. But new research provides evidence that the area was very different in the past. The evidence was found inside a piece of earth sediment collected by researchers from under the sea floor off the coast of Antarctica. In the sediment, they found forest soil estimated to be about 90 million years old. This would have been in the Cretaceous period, when dinosaurs were the main land animals. The sediment was removed by scientists on the research icebreaker RV Polarstern in the Amundsen Sea near the Pine Island Glacier. Johan Klages is a geologist with the Alfred Wegener Institute's Helmholtz Center for Polar and Marine Research in Germany. He was the lead writer of a study on the findings published in the journal Nature. He said the sediment was collected from a depth of about 30 meters below the ocean floor. Klages said an examination showed that the material formed on land, not in the ocean. The researchers estimate that the area, about 900 kilometers from the South Pole, had average yearly temperatures of about 12 to 13 degrees Celsius. During the warmest summer months, average temperatures likely reached between 20 to 25 degrees Celsius. The average yearly temperature in that area is about 40 degrees below zero Celsius. The examination process included the use of X-ray imaging technology. Those results showed a dense network of roots that spread through the entire soil layer, the Helmholtz Center said in a statement. The condition of the soil was in such good condition that the researchers could see individual cell structures. The dark brownish-gray soil included fine dirt particles and hard clay, as well as substances linked to at least 65 different kinds of plants, the study found. If you would go to a forest near you and drill a hole, it would probably look pretty similar, Klages told the Reuters news agency. He added that the plants included trees, ferns, and flowering plants. While no animal remains were found, Klages said there were likely dinosaurs, flying reptiles, and many insects in the environment. The research represents new evidence of the major climate changes Earth has experienced in the past and is currently undergoing today. The soil dates back to the planet's warmest period of the past 140 million years, with sea levels about 170 meters higher than today. The researchers said that the rainforest environment in Antarctica was especially surprising because each year the area experiences a 4-month polar night when there is no sunlight to fuel plant life. Klages said no ice sheets were present during the time, but seasonal snowfall was likely. I'm Brian Lynn.
Coronavirus crisis has launched a very large, unplanned experiment with online learning in the United States. And it has created problems for school children with limited internet or no internet service. School officials and governments in many areas are trying to give millions of U.S. students without home internet a chance at keeping up with their studies. Many students in rural South Carolina have been having trouble getting online since schools in the U.S. state closed. But recently, 6 buses equipped with Wi-Fi internet came to help. The state has sent hundreds of buses to rural areas since schools closed because of the coronavirus crisis. The buses broadcast high-speed internet in an area the size of a small parking lot. Parents can drive up in their cars, and their children can use the internet inside the vehicles. One of the buses is outside of the apartment building of Lachelle Moore. She had been limiting her mobile phone usage so that her daughter could use the data on her mobile plan to do schoolwork. Mobile service providers charge extra money if people use more data than their plan permits. "I have to put extra data on my phone to make sure her work gets done," said Moore. Moore works as a cashier. She said she changed her work hours to help teach her 2 children. It is estimated that 3 million students do not have internet service at home because of the high cost and gaps in availability. Some studies suggest that these students are more likely to be students of color, from low-income families, or have parents with lower education levels. The nation's largest school districts are spending millions of dollars to provide devices and internet connections for students. These include the cities of Los Angeles and New York. Smaller districts are finding ways to improve wireless internet in school parking lots and provide hotspots for internet service. Others are using paper schoolwork and books. Maura McInerney is the legal director of the Education Law Center, which supports policies to help low-income students. She said the school closings are causing these children to fall behind further. Lower-income school districts are forced to find other ways to meet the educational needs of their students. In Fairfield County, South Carolina, 51% of families have no high-speed internet. Those numbers come from an Associated Press study of census information. It is estimated that 18% of all U.S. students do not have high-speed internet. Lots of mothers and fathers are really not equipped to be homeschool parents, said J.R. Green, the top school official in his district. In South Carolina, school districts requested hundreds of buses in a program targeting low-income and rural areas, state education spokesperson Ryan Brown said. The state was ready to provide more buses, but Brown said that internet service providers' offers of low-cost and even free service plans lessened the demand. The Philadelphia School District banned online schooling during the early days of the school closings because only about half the district's high school students have a laptop or tablet and home internet service. Now, it appears that schools are likely to be closed for a longer period of time. Philadelphia plans to buy 50,000 Chromebook tablets and begin online schooling by the middle of April. Based in Philadelphia, the company Comcast has promised to increase speeds of its $10 a month plan for low-income school families. It also is offering 2 months of free service. We have the $10 internet plan. It's not for doing lessons because it's really slow, said parent Cecilia Thompson, who is 54 years old. She said she would need a higher internet speed to use the Google Classroom, which is too costly for her. Thompson cannot work because of her health. She lives with her 21-year-old son, a student with autism, who goes to Martin Luther King High School. Mike Looney is the superintendent of Fulton County Schools in Georgia. He said parents should take offers for reduced-cost internet from service providers. But he also wants the Federal Communications Commission to put money that was once used for lowering costs of school internet toward supplying students with devices and internet at home. It is an idea that has support from some U.S. senators. In central Ohio, Hilliard City Schools provided students with Apple iPads they can use to download, complete, and then submit homework. The iPads permit them to do much of their work without internet, says District Superintendent John Marshhausen. But they will need to connect in order to submit completed work and receive their new lessons. The district's nearly 25 schools are extending Wi-Fi into their parking lots so families can complete downloads from their vehicles. Marshhausen said he thinks most students will not find the changes difficult. But he worries about the major change for younger students, who usually spend less than half an hour on their devices in the classroom. We're going to have to do a lot of adapting and a lot of learning along with our families if this is truly something that will continue into the summer, he said. I'm Alice Bryant.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we continue the story of America's 36th president, Lyndon Baines Johnson. Johnson was vice president to John F. Kennedy. Kennedy was murdered in Dallas in November of 1963. Johnson served the last 14 months of the president's term. Then he won a full term of his own, starting in January 1965. Most of Johnson's time and energy would be taken up by the war in Vietnam. By early 1964, America had about 17,000 troops in Vietnam. The troops were there to advise and train the South Vietnamese military. Vietnam had gained its independence from France in 1954. The country was divided into North and South. The North had a communist government led by Ho Chi Minh. The South had an anti-communist government led by Ngo Dinh Diem. In 1957, communist rebels, the Viet Cong, launched a violent campaign in the South. They were supported by the government of North Vietnam and later by North Vietnamese troops. Their goal was to overthrow the government in the South. President Johnson believed that the United States had to support South Vietnam. Many Americans agreed. They believed that without American help, South Vietnam would become communist. There were concerns about the so-called domino theory, that if South Vietnam fell, other Southeast Asian countries would also fall to communists. As Johnson began his full term, his military advisors told him the communists were losing the war. They told him that North Vietnamese troops and Viet Cong forces would soon stop fighting. On February 6, 1965, however, the Viet Cong attacked American camps at Pleiku and Kinon. The Johnson administration immediately ordered airstrikes against military targets in the North. Some observers in the United States questioned the administration's policy. James Reston of the New York Times, for example, said President Johnson was carrying out an undeclared war in Vietnam. In March 1965, the first American combat troops arrived in South Vietnam. Congress supported the president's actions at that time. However, the number of Americans who opposed the war began to grow. These people said it was a civil war. They said the United States had no right or reason to intervene. For 6 days in May, the United States halted bombing of North Vietnam. The administration hoped this would help get the North Vietnamese government to begin negotiations. The North refused, and the United States began to build up its forces in the South. By July, 125,000 Americans were fighting in Vietnam. Some Americans became angry. Anti-war demonstrations took place in San Francisco and Chicago. more and more students began to protest. They wanted the war to end quickly. Some people thought the anti-war demonstrations were only delaying peace in Vietnam. James Reston believed the demonstrations would make Ho Chi Minh think America did not support its troops. And that, he said, would only make him continue the war. In December of 1965, the United States again halted its air campaign against North Vietnam. Again, it invited the North Vietnamese government to negotiate an end to the fighting. And again, the North refused. Ho Chi Minh's conditions for peace were firm. He demanded an end to the bombing and a complete American withdrawal. Withdrawal would mean defeat for the South. It would mean that all of Vietnam would become communist. President Johnson would not accept these terms, so he offered his own proposals. The most important was an immediate ceasefire. Neither side would compromise, however, and the fighting went on. In 1966, President Johnson renewed the bombing in North Vietnam. He also increased the number of American troops in South Vietnam. ...1966 was also a year for congressional elections. The opposition Republican Party generally supported the war efforts of Lyndon Johnson, who was a Democrat. But it criticized him and other Democrats for economic problems connected to the war. The war cost $2 billion every month. The price of many goods in the United States began to rise. The value of the dollar began to drop. Americans faced inflation and then a recession. To answer the criticism, administration officials said progress was being made in Vietnam, but some Americans began to suspect that the government was not telling the truth about the war. Opposition to the war led to bigger and bigger demonstrations. In July 1967, just over half the people questioned for opinion surveys said they did not approve of the president's policies. But most Americans believed that Johnson would run again for president the next year. Johnson strongly defended the use of American troops in Vietnam. In a speech to a group of lawmakers, he said, "Since World War II, this nation has met and has mastered many challenges. Challenges in Greece and Turkey, in Berlin, in Korea, in Cuba. We met them because brave men were willing to risk their lives for their nation's security. And braver men have never lived than those who carry our colors in Vietnam at this very hour." The price of these efforts, of course, has been heavy. But the price of not having made them at all, not having seen them through, in my judgment, would have been vastly greater. Then came Tet, the Vietnamese Lunar New Year, in January 1968. The communists launched a major military campaign. They attacked 31 of the 44 provinces of South Vietnam. They also struck at the American embassy in the capital, Saigon.
Military police got back into the compound of the $2.5 million embassy complex at dawn. Before that, a platoon of Viet Cong were in control. The communist raiders never got into the main chancery building. A handful of Marines had it locked and kept them out. But the raiders were everywhere else.
CBS News reporter George Sievertson described more of the fighting in Saigon and how it affected civilians in a poor part of the city.
This neighborhood is called the Chessboard because of the maze of alleys and passageways. Its residents are mostly poor working people, and its slums are a refuge for Saigon's hoodlum and criminal elements. Vietnamese Rangers and Marines move carefully, blasting buildings and possible Viet Cong hiding places before moving ahead. This was the first time heavy fighting has taken place in Saigon proper. Until now, most of it has been in the Chinese section of Cho Lan and in the suburbs. The VC were difficult to dislodge. They obviously knew the section well and had built barricades in key spots. The Rangers and Marines took casualties, mostly from hidden snipers. As soon as a section had been cleared, more terror-stricken civilians scurried out of their homes, thousands of them fleeing from the bullets and explosives, and even more dangerous, a fire that began to rage out of control. Residents in nearby buildings began dragging their most precious possessions out of their shops and homes. Saigon's water supply system is operating only at 70% of normal, so fires are a serious menace. For these people, many of them who fled the war from outlying villages, this is the cruelest blow. The curfew has kept them from making a living. Food prices have tripled since the fighting began a week ago. And now, their homes are being destroyed.
Thousands of people were killed in the Tet Offensive. The communists suffered heavier losses than the South Vietnamese or the Americans. But many Americans were surprised that the communists could launch such a major attack against South Vietnam. For several years, they had been told that communist forces were small and losing badly. General William Westmoreland, commander of U.S. military operations in Vietnam, spoke with reporter George Sievertson.
General, how would you assess yesterday's activities and today's? What is the enemy doing? Are these major attacks or...
The enemy, very deceitfully, has taken advantage of the Tet Truce in order to create maximum consternation within South Vietnam, particularly in the populated areas. Now, yesterday, the enemy exposed himself by virtue of this strategy, and he suffered great casualties.
As a result of the offensive, popular support for the administration fell even more. Democrats who opposed President Johnson seized this chance. Several ran against him for the party's nomination in 1968. These included Senator Robert Kennedy of New York and Senator Eugene McCarthy of Minnesota. Kennedy and McCarthy did well in the early primary elections. Johnson did poorly. At the end of March 1968, the president spoke to the American people. He discussed his proposal to end American bombing of North Vietnam. He talked about his appointment of a special ambassador to start peace negotiations. And he announced his decision about his own future.
I do not believe that I should devote an hour or a day of my time to any personal partisan causes or to any duties other than the awesome duties of this office, the presidency of your country. Accordingly, I shall not seek and I will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
Another major issue facing America in the 1960s was the civil rights movement, which sought to ensure equal rights for black Americans.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.